fancy being married to twins, somebody had smirked on Sandra's wedding day. Ooh, I mean, they look just the same, you wouldn't know which. At that time, she just smiled and said, yes, it was funny, but she could tell her Sid from his brother Brian. Over the years, it had stopped being funny. In fact, it had become downright sickening. Brian would be around 3 or 4 times a week for his tea. She could have put up with that, but having Brian to a meal could drive a person crazy. This was going to be the day, because Sid had to go to town to get his social. Sandra stood in the middle of the bedroom, hesitating. The lightweight hold-all gaped open on the double bed. She had a flowered cotton dress in her hand. What if it didn't work out? What if she got too bad? You never knew. Then she saw this picture. Best cloth on, nice beef casserole with carrots floating in it, peas, mashed potatoes, everything set out lovely. Brian bumbles in.
What's this, then? What do you call this? Why can't you leave things as they are?
Then a sequence of pictures flashed up. Years and years of Brian picking and poking and cross-examining, having to have his food all lined up, spuds, meat, veg, as though you'd taken a ruler and drawn out spaces on the plate for them. The whole time she'd been frying the onions and the mushrooms for the casserole, she'd been thinking, I don't care, I'm going to do it just for once. It had been like a challenge. And when he'd come shambling in, she'd been waiting for it. It had been then as though something inside her had snapped. Well, I'm sick of you. Sick to the back teeth of you. Leave it if you don't like it.
No need to bite me, Duffy. You know I don't like out like that, Sandra.
She could have strangled him. She put the dress into the bag and then in a rush packed her white Cortel cardigan. If that Shirley in the film could take off for exotic places, then so could she. Sid wouldn't go anywhere. Could never get him to the seaside.
It's too hot. What do I want to be prattin' round there for? All that sun-blooded donkeys and dog shit, no way.
Her eye fell on the big photo on the dressing table. There she was, 19, the virgin bride, in a white wedding dress of nylon lace. Next to her, one on each side, were the brothers. They were both 6'3" and their black hair was brill-creamed as smooth and slippery as eels on the fishmonger's slab. She'd always hoped at first that Brian would find somebody. There'd been Noreen and Eileen at the pub where she'd been barmaiding. She'd got them round when he was visiting, but he'd kept his head down, taking no interest in them. After that, she'd rattled on about emigration, all those who were off to Australia or New Zealand. But they have a really exciting outdoor life, surfing, you know.
I can't bloody swim, I get drowned.
However, borne it all these years, she thrust her cosmetic bag in on top of the cardigan and then pushed in her best pink nylon nightie with the lace bits on the front. Finally, she stood before the mirror. She was wearing a flowing skirt with an elasticated waistband over which hung a white blouse. Nowadays, she had to disguise the bulges. Still, if she didn't look at herself sideways, the picture was quite encouraging. Well, she wasn't as bonny as Shirley Valentine, but she didn't look too much of a freak. As she let herself out, she heard the Yale lock snap behind her, and she felt a surge of satisfaction. Oh, there was something warming about the idea of it suddenly dawning on them that she wasn't there anymore. She hurried round the corner to the long-distance bus depot. There stood the Whitby bus. She was escaping. But even as she was lifting her bag in, she expected to hear voices behind her.
Where do you think you're off to then, our Sandra?
She didn't stop holding her breath until the engine began to brum and they were on the way. Then she sat back and felt herself relaxing. This was it. Journey into the unknown. Now she planned what she would do. She had her purse stuffed with the entire housekeeping, plus her rainy day money that she kept hidden in a knicker drawer. In Whitby, she would find a hotel and book in, and then the dream would begin. Shirley sat on her own at a white table on the shore and stared out at the sunset while savouring her wine, and then the dark stranger came up to her. Sandra imagined herself in her best dress, the one with the pink mauve and blue flowers. She'd be sitting there, sipping a Riesling. Well, no point in making it champers. And then... The bus rumbled along, and for some reason, she started thinking about that first evening when she'd met Sid. Sweet 17, and she'd bought a black dress out of the wages from the shop. It had had a fitted bodice and a skirt that flared out over stiff petticoats. The way it swung about her thighs had thrilled her. At the dance, she'd climbed the twisty staircase and stood at the top looking down. It was then she'd first seen him. Sidney. What a streak of lightning he'd been in his maroon draped suit with the black velvet revers and his black hair real long and brill-creamed back. "Oh," he told her later, "I looked straight up your skirt and seen your suspenders and your white legs at the top of them black nylons. I'll get her, I thought. You was Bridget Bardot, your BB. I knew you was the girl for me." It seemed strange to be on her own. The thought of doing things by herself made her feel jittery, and she came over all hot and tingly. "Oh, it's just me age," she told herself. "I'm not falling apart. It's just me age." In Whitby, the sun was shining. Orange-legged gulls ambled along the deck of swaying fishing boats. It was magic. Sidney hadn't ever taken her to the seaside. She'd had to go for day trips with the kiddies on her own when they were little. Where would she go? Maybe she'd find a cafe first. Nice pot of tea and a toasted tea cake. That'd give her time to think. It was as Sandra turned left into a shopping street that she found herself bang up against a chap about her own height, whose white hair was slapped back against his skull in an old Tony Curtis wave, and his pudgy cheeks pulled into instant laughter.
"It's Sandra Beaumont that was," he gusted. "Well, I never."
She couldn't stop grinning. It was Errol Smith, her sweetheart from primary school days. "Errol," she heard herself cooing. She felt about six. She remembered him saying to her confidentially, "You come with me, Sandra, into the boys' lab and I'll show you my willy if you show me your fanny." Although quite anxious to examine his willy, because having five sisters and no brothers meant she'd never seen one, she thought it rude and refused. Or at least she imagined she had.
"Come on, lass, let's go and have a bevy."
His proposal wasn't quite what she had in mind.
"Where have you been all my life?" he asked her as they walked along the harbour side in the direction of the pier.
He listed a bit like a trawler in a high sea. "Oh," she said, a bit taken aback, "married to Sid Pollack. What's been happening to you?"
"This and that," he guffawed,
and swivelled his blue eyes to squint at her, so that she had to smile back. They bumped into a pub on the harbour side where the brown gloom hit her eyes and the smell of smoke and old spilt beer stirred in her nostrils made her sneeze. Men stood at the bar who had navy blue messages drilled into their hairy arms and gold chains round their necks. Errol had a thick gold chain too, and it shifted in the grey hair on his chest when a button opened on his white shirt. He bought her a lager and lime and a pint for himself and sat opposite her. "I thought as you'd married Betty Lindley," she said.
"Did. Didn't last, though."
"Oh."
"Then there was Janice Bates. Didn't last either. Now I'm open to offers."
Sandra came out in a sweat under her arms and on her chest and took a gulp of lager. "Aren't you working?"
"Redundant. Most of 'em's redundant." "You was a looker," he said. "A real looker."
She didn't know what to say. She chanced to glance across at Errol and saw his saggy jowls and the folds round his eyes and mouth. His stomach thrust towards her under his shirt. All of him seemed to be reaching out towards her. The pints came and went, his blue eyes swabbing moisture.
"He turned me backside off, did Mr. Crawley?"
"Yes," she said, "she was a bad lad."
"But you like the bad uns."
She was steaming hot again.
"It's a rum-do, life," he mused. "A rum-do."
"Yes," she murmured, feeling just how rum it was. A sudden piercing sadness overcame her for that disappointment in his face. They'd been such eager 6-year-olds.
What say we go up to me caravan?
Oh, she heard herself saying, it's very nice of you, Errol, but I've got to be getting back home now. It's just a day trip, you know.
Pity, he belched to himself. Still, let's have a fish and chip supper.
They were outside with the heat hitting their foreheads. Everywhere smelt fishy and a bit gone off. Errol's bulk swayed beside her and she was a worm that he would gobble up. She could almost feel the big moistness of him, snapping her up and swallowing her down in one great glug. Or he would take her to his caravan, the third Mrs. Smith, and suffocate her there with his vast bulk and never notice, or just roll his eyeballs and laugh. In the fish and chip restaurant, they sat by the window.
"Sure you won't change your mind, Sand," he said suddenly. "It's nice in me caravan."
"No, I've got to get back home. Can't leave them." His eyes sank into the folds of disappointment for a second, but brightened as the plates of haddock and chips clattered down on the formica.
"Get torin, lass,"
he said, rushing a forkful of chips to his mouth and chomping with relish. In no time he'd finished his plate and was peeking longingly at hers, so she offered him some. Meanwhile, she consulted the timetable. She could just catch the last bus back. Errol shoved her back up on the rack.
"Why, you got this lot for a day trip," he said.
She blushed and floundered. "Well, you never know. Bye-bye then, Errol." She was on the last bus up from the town to the estate. It reeked of beer and young lads shouted and sang. Now she was worrying about them. Suspense built up in her chest like wind. The time she and Sydney had gone to London, she'd been 45 then, it had been her first visit. They'd ended up in the British Museum. She'd been somewhere behind this big white marble Buddha looking at something, and she'd forgotten about him. All of a sudden, turning, she found Sydney, his eyes staring, trembling all over, fretting because he'd lost sight of her.
"Don't ever go running off like that again, or I'll..."
They'd never spoken about it afterwards. All the lights were on in the house as she approached. Finally, she got the front door open, and her nostrils were seduced by the aroma of Irish stew. What could this be? Normally, she'd have called out, "Cooey, it's only me." Now she hesitated and made for the kitchen. A familiar beanstalk figure, lassoed partially by her flowered overall and wearing a baseball cap back to front, was flapping about at the cooker with a wooden spoon in his hand. "Bri!" she squeaked.
"Son, I knew as you'd come back. I told him you would,"
Brian vibrated. She was faced with a Brian she'd never seen before. He looked like Sid when she'd first met him, animated, wolfish, tricky and seductive.
"I've got this here on because it smells of you," he said, indicating the overall. "Look, this is how you do it, isn't it? Look, see, all mixed up. Carrots, meat, the lot. Look."
"Oh, yes, Bri, yes," she muttered.
"I'm doing this for you, see. You're married to me and always have been since you married him. But you've always tried to palm me off, haven't you?"
"No, I haven't really, Bri. I just thought maybe..."
"Yeah, well, you was wrong. Look, and I made a bread and butter pudding."
"Goodness me.
Table set."
Bri, where's Sid then?"
"Oh, he's down the boozer in a sulk. Get sat down, I'll be bringing it in."
Before she could say Jack Robinson, still parcelled in flower-sprigged Bri nylon, Bri was shambling in with the tureens. As he sat down, fixing her with blazing eyes, the Shirley Valentine refrain began whooshing and churning again in Sandra's head. She felt a tingling in her solar plexus. This was it, then. Whoopee!
Jill Graham was reading Seeing Double by Daphne Glaser. The producer was Sue Wilson.